Okay, when you Americans hear about a daily arts and cultural affairs show from Canada, I know you're thinking hockey and Celine Dion, eh? Well, think again. I'm Gian Gameschi, the host of Q, your daily dose of live music, interviews, and explorations of the latest cultural trends. Join me for Q, weeknights at 10 on 93.9 FM, WNYC.
Advertisements that extol the benefits of for-profit colleges seem to be everywhere, on television, the internet, and in our subway cars. But how much value do these colleges actually deliver to their students, and why do so many of them charge very high rates? Village Voice contributor Chris Parker has looked into the world of for-profit education, and his article, For-Profit Colleges Only a Con Man Could Love, was published earlier this month in that newspaper. We have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Parker to our show. Hello.
Hi, Leonard.
How much money is the for-profit college industry currently worth?
It makes about $30 billion a year, and that's from the federal government, and that provides about 90% of their income.
$30 billion. I don't know how that compares with other colleges, but that sounds like a lot of money. is this something, a fast-growing industry?
Yeah, it's grown rather dramatically. I think in 2001, it was about 5% of the student culture nationwide. And now it's up to about 13-15%.
Wow. Would listeners be familiar with many of the schools you looked at, like the University of Phoenix or ITT? I think ITT runs ads in the subways, doesn't it?
Yeah, ITT is a big one, Strayer College, Brown-Mackey, a lot of the things that you'll see on late-night television, they carpet bomb the airwaves. They spend about the top 15 colleges spend about $13 billion a year in recruiting and marketing.
What's the average tuition at most of these schools?
The average tuition, it varies from 2 year to 4 year, but they tend to be around $17,000-$18,000 a year, which is about double the rate of a public and state college.
Uh-huh. But less than a college where you have to pay tuition.
Well, you have to pay tuition at all colleges.
Yeah, I mean, Harvard costs a lot more money.
Yeah, less than a private nonprofit, exactly. Yeah.
Are employers looking for graduates of these colleges? Because they often stress in their ads that they are preparing you for going into some industry.
Well, it varies widely. You know, the for-profit colleges, a lot of these were trade schools, or at least, through the 90s, a lot of these were trade schools and smaller schools that teach specialized things. But as it went on, especially when it went online, it tended to move on from that. And so some of these degrees are quite worthless.
You get a business degree for $90,000 and then nobody wants to hire you?
Yeah, or you get a degree in art or photography from an art institute school and find that none of the skills you learn are applicable.
But most of the people who go to these schools drop out, don't they?
Yeah, I heard a statistic the other day that 9% of the people at University of Phoenix, I think it was, graduate after 4 years.
That means 91% don't graduate?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now maybe, and now that's after, in the time frame, I think it's 4 to 6 years, but, maybe they graduate after. But the problem with it is that because these schools are generally don't have the same accreditation as a Harvard or an Ohio State or an NYU, you can't transfer those credits. So you paid for all these credits, and say you want to transfer and go to another college, they won't accept them.
But they do get accredited, don't they?
They do get accredited. There is a national accreditation organizations. However, a lot of these have kind of been compromised by the process. I mean, they make their money off of dues, and they tend to be a lot more beholden to the people who are giving them dues than the students who, require their services in a way.
So you're buying your accreditation?
Very often, I mean, it comes down to literally buying in some cases. There are schools that have gone out and bought, say, a struggling college, a church or a religious college out in Iowa, slapped a new name on it, and then, you know, started enrolling people for online classes under this name of this college that has been around for 80 years or whatever. And they get the accreditation because they bought the college.
Well, Ashford, one of the schools you profiled, just bought its accreditation, you suggest.
Yeah, in just that way, exactly. But it's been done in a number of different places. Because accreditation takes a while to do, because it's, you know, evaluating the quality of the classes and the quality of the instruction and the level of instruction, the level of depth in the classes. Because that can take a few years. These for-profit colleges, many of them run by, you know, investment firms on Wall Street, they want to see that money come in quick. And the way to get that in quick is to buy a college, take that accreditation, pump it onto online, and start enrolling online students for classes, taking in their federal aid money.
When you say companies on Wall Street, banks, private equity firms, any whose names I'd recognize?
Well, a big one is Goldman Sachs, and they've been involved with one of the most most troubled ones. Right now, EDMC, which runs a number of colleges, including the Art Institutes and Brown Mackey, they've had a run. They're only supposed to get 90% of their money from the federal government. They must figure out ways to come up with 10% of their income someplace else. Last year they didn't. They actually got 91% of their money from the U.S. government, or 90.5. And so now it may be that they'll have all of their federal aid pulled, because you can't do that.
My guest is Chris Parker, who wrote an article for The Village Voice called For-Profit Colleges Only a Con Man Could Love, Barbarians in the Ivory Tower. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. We mentioned Ashford. I would think that any accreditor would look at how Ashford operates. It has 50 full-time faculty members to teach 90,000 online students. That's something like 1,800 students per classroom. Teachers complain about having to grade papers. How does one teacher grade 1,800 students?
I can't honestly say. I assume that there is a lot of stuff that's already, you know, automated, so they can fill out tests and do tests online. It can be automatically done. This is what this is about, you know, turning education into an economy of scale.
Well, you begin your piece with the story of Bobby Ruffin Jr., who was 14 when a recruiter for Ashford University called him. Why would an online college go after someone who's in middle school?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily that the college itself is going after these students. It's more that they create an atmosphere, a very cutthroat atmosphere for the recruiters. You are expected to bring in students, and to some extent, and in some cases, they don't care how or who you bring in, as long as you bring in the numbers.
And what did the recruiter tell him?
The recruiter told Bobby that the school would help him get him on his way to being a doctor, and that he shouldn't tell his parents. He should just surprise them after he's completed the course. Well, I'm sure they would have been very surprised when they found out that he owed $100,000 in debt.
And what did he get for that money?
In the end, he didn't finish more than he finished less than a year. When he tried to get out of it, they told him that because he was underage, he wasn't eligible to receive federal aid. Somebody lied on the financial aid form. He ended up it turns out he wasn't of age. They had to return the aid, and they billed him, and they said that he couldn't have his transcript back until he paid them that money. That meant that he couldn't send that transcript to schools. At least that's what Bobby says.
Now, you mentioned that federal aid accounts for 90% of their revenue. So we, the taxpayers, are paying for these colleges?
Yeah. It's really funny. They make up maybe 13 or 14% of the student body, but they get a quarter of all federal higher education grants and loans. It's because they say they try and target lower-income people, but it kind of seems strange if you're going to target lower-income people and then lard them up with debt, which is kind of why people have compared this to the mortgage crisis.
The industry spent $16 million on lobbying last year. Is that why the deficit hawks in Congress don't seem to be all that interested in this industry?
Well, that's part of it, and I think also you know, it's very easy to feel good about spending federal money on education. It's just a feel-good story. So for a lot of Republicans, I think, you know, for-profit colleges are, we're supporting free enterprise. But the kind of free enterprise they're supporting is the same type that Goldman Sachs offered when the mortgage crisis went down.
And that was also a story in deregulation. Is this as well?
Yeah, it is. Originally, we had had problems with for-profit colleges, specifically the same types of problems the recruiters that Bobby had, where people are doing shady endeavors to get people signed up. It actually happened in the 70s, and they slapped these limits on how you could compensate recruiters. Then it happened again in the 90s with Sam Nunn. And then again, these laws get watered back down, and it happens again, which I guess just shows how effective lobbying can be.
Did you speak to anyone in the industry?
I spoke to a wide variety of people, from lawyers involved in it to students, to teachers, to people who worked for some of the accreditation and oversight agencies.
And how do they defend themselves?
I think a lot of for-profit colleges do try and accomplish what they want. I think the fact that there became so much money involved in it in the last 10 years has drawn out a lot of the bad elements. I think after the Nunn reforms, a lot of the places cleaned up their act. So for some, it's, we aren't the bad apples. And for the bad apples, they'll try and pass it off as, well, we're helping people who wouldn't go to school otherwise. But it's really disconcerting. In 2000, more lower-income people attended public four-year colleges, 20% to 13% attended for-profit schools. 8 years later, those numbers had switched, and nearly 20% were attending for-profits, and 15% were going to the public four-year institutions. And we're just sending them off to worse schools for more money.
And they also go after veterans, don't they? At least according to the ads that I see.
Yeah, it's been a terrible thing because that I mentioned that 90-10 where they have to get 90% of their money from the federal government. Because of that, there's a loophole written into this where money from the VA, from the vet, you know, the vet educational benefit doesn't count as federal student or student aid, which seems kind of inconsistent.
A listener, Bob from New Jersey, says he teaches at a for-profit college, and they take in as many students as they can, even though most of them never graduate because they aren't college material.
Well, that's the thing, because they can get that student loan money regardless of whether the student's going to complete the course or not. They're just looking to cash that person in, and they don't have educational standards in a lot of cases to let people in, so it doesn't matter. In the 90s, they were actually going and recruiting people out of homeless shelters to get them signed up so they could get that federal aid money.
When you looked at all these schools, did you find any that were actually delivering something of value?
There are ones out there. Where all the smoke and all the fire is generally the biggest ones, though. The smaller ones, the ones that don't advertise, the one in your community, that might be really good. But the ones that are spending $13 billion a year trying to sell you something, they may not be selling you what you think that you're getting.
You note that one company had to reach a settlement with 20 attorneys general for operating GIBill.com, which was designed to look like a government site, but was actually a lead generator for profit colleges?
Yeah, The reason a lot of people fall into for-profit colleges is because they just aren't savvy enough shoppers. And the more you bombard them, the easier it is to lure them in. So if you can get them on Education Connection or get them the GI Bill, get them to the recruiters, these recruiters will call them maybe every single day of the week.
If I were to take out $100,000 in loans to go to one of these schools, when would I have to pay it back?
Well, it depends on where you got your money. The federal student loans are tend to be able to be deferred, at least until you're working. They will make hardship exemptions in terms of delaying paying it back. The private loans, Sallie Mae and those offered by the colleges, they tend to not be so generous. And because of changes that were written into the rules when they opened these things up and opened them up to online, it's now they have some of the most restrictive collection practices in the entire collection business. They can garnish wages. They can even get your accreditation, your PhD, and put a suspension on that if you aren't paying up.
So who's making all the money here? Is it the CEOs at these not-for-profits like the University of Phoenix?
Well, they do make a lot of money. To give you a baseline, the president of Harvard makes about $800,000 a year. A typical guy at one of these colleges will make $20 million a year, a lot of it in stock options. When Jeff Grayer, who for 14 years was the CEO of Kaplan, which grew to become a big player in this during the mid-aughts, he left with a $76 million severance package. Good work if you can get it.
Boy, I'm going to start a university as soon as possible. Has any research been done on the value of this online education and how it compares to education in a classroom?
Well, I'm not sure about I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of anecdotal evidence and comments about the quality of the education. The thing that strikes me is there was a study done a couple of years ago in which they studied the classes at a for-profit college that receive federal aid and the classes at a for-profit college that didn't receive federal aid, compared similar programs, and they found that the ones that received federal aid were paying 75% more tuition for the same class, and that 75%, that was exactly the amount in federal aid that they were getting.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today.
I appreciate it, Leonard.
The article that was in the Village Voice a few weeks ago called For-Profit Colleges Only a Con Man Could Love is also available through a link on our show page at WNYC.org. And Chris Parker wrote it. Chris, are you going to follow up on this story?
Not sure how soon we're going to follow up. There's a lot of movement in Congress to try and do something. This has raised some hackles, and the HELP Committee, Health, Education, Labor, is looking into this. So hopefully something will be done. But I'm also working on a new story on tax reform.
Okay. Well, we look forward to reading that. Thank you again.